Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back my really good friend, Mark De La Tour. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. How are you, mate?
Thanks for coming on a podcast. You're back, and great to have you back.
Yeah, always good to do a check-in. So nice to have some time with you.
So what's latest and greatest in the world of Mark? What's happening with personal life? Anything interesting in business? Just let's start with kind of news. Anything interesting going on?
I guess personally, we're kind of having one of our children fly the roost here this year. So my oldest son, Jackson, is heading to Emporia State University on a baseball scholarship. So excited for his next. And although that will be very hard to have him leave the house, he is only just 2 hours away. So yeah, we're excited for him. He's a fine young man. And we're excited to just see him, you know, grow into what he's excited to go challenge himself, not only on the baseball field, but also in the classroom.
That's awesome to hear. I think sports is a great way to build character, and getting a college scholarship means he's done well. So
yeah, I was talking to my daughter on the way to her volleyball practice, and she's getting ready to, she's not competitively athletic. She just enjoys to have fun with her friends. And she was talking about how Jackson is, she's like, yeah, he's all into baseball. And I think I explained to her, I said, you know, there's a lesson there, because when you're fully dedicated to working out and baseball, and then you go to college and you're fully dedicated to baseball and school, and then you get done with that, and that was a season in life, you just find the next thing to be fully dedicated to. So I think, to your point, there is a lot of translation from having a commitment and a diligence into your pursuit, whether that be athletics for now, but it obviously translates extremely well. In fact, some companies out there like Enterprise Rent-A-Car just hire student athletes because they've found that those are the best people to come in and run their company.
I concur with you 100%. My girls have gone through figure skating, and I know the drill. It's if you're very, very competitive at a high level, it's remarkable. Obviously, training you train your body to the nth level, but you also train your mind, the discipline, organizational skills, and that translates to typically future success in folks, whatever they do. So that's definitely great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the business. So what's going on in Kansas City, Midwest, how things are holding up? We're recording this second half of March 2024. What's happening with the housing market? Just curious, what are you seeing? What are the opportunities? What's new?
So in Kansas City, extreme strong job growth and strong housing market. So yeah, things are really, really strong here. We are seeing not only, you know, what I see today, that Google announced a $1 billion plant that's going to come in North Kansas City. Panasonic just announced a $5 billion plant that they're doing to build electric batteries. So they're going to do 5,000 employees over the next 10 years. I mean, lots of huge companies are coming in. There's lots of warehousing, kind of transportation logistics, with us being so centrally located in the United States. There's certainly job growth and population growth coming to this vibrant and upgrowing city, you know. And obviously, although it may be not everyone's most important thing, having, you know, defending Super Bowl champions back to back actually delivers a lot of, you know, when Kansas City is so well publicized, you know, across ESPN, you know, people looking for great places, when Kansas City is constantly mentioned, it does impact not just tourism, but also job growth. I mean, people love to come and be part of a winning team and a winning franchise, and there's just a lot of energy in the city right now.
That's a great point. I guess having 3 out of 5 years, it's a rare feat, and puts Kansas City into the category of some of the greatest team in the NFL history. And they definitely what do you call it, a dynasty, a legacy.
Yes.
And yeah, it should have impact on the business, definitely positive. And interesting that you said Google is investing $1 billion to build, I assume, is it a data center? Is it just to hire a bunch
Data
of
center.
yeah, it's very powerful. And Midwest is kind of interesting. These are steady markets,
Cheap
and
land.
yeah, it's a and the opportunities for steady, predictable growth, jobs, housing make a lot of sense. You have less volatility, more predictability. Kind of things don't go up and down the same way they go in some other markets. So,
Yeah, and I think that
less.
translates when you have big, Fortune 500 companies that are investing, in satellite offices or secondary offices or ancillary offices. I think there's a huge benefit to having a low cost of living option for some people that don't necessarily value being in on the coast or in one of the bigger, top 10 markets of Phoenix, LA, San Diego, New York, Philly, or whatever. Some people might want to just say, hey, look, I'm going to come where, $500,000 can actually buy me a mansion rather than a one bedroom apartment. And so, those are very real decisions that I think are being made in corporate America that are having a good impact on the housing market. So, yeah, no, all positive signs. Where we're pivoting in business, Mike, is, it used to be where we were kind of known as the full turnkey provider of single family homes. The interesting thing is the ramp up in the marketplace has really caused us to be able to gain so much more for our housing on the open market that we've kind of pivoted away from doing investor sales on the full turnkey single family side of the equation. And we're just selling retail now and getting significantly more, probably about 15% more return on our investments, which obviously allows us to buy for more and offload those. So that obviously leaves a little bit of a void for our investor base and how we've kind of filled that void of them saying, hey, we still want to be increasing our portfolio. We have pivoted to new construction duplexes and fourplexes over the last 2 years, and that's really been very well received. I think our investors are appreciative of the low maintenance or low to no maintenance on their brand new construction, as well as lower vacancy and a more propensity. I think when you and I were at CG recently, there was one of the hedge fund guys, Kevin Baldridge, was on one of our Zoom calls in there, and he came in as a virtual keynote speaker, and he spoke about one thing that they, as a hedge fund, look for in their future developments is the public's or the future resident prospects' propensity to pay. And that kind of stuck with me. I'm like, that's an interesting term, but they look at it as what is the likelihood of them getting paid rent every time on the first of the month? And that's something that we've seen a significant uptick on, a lower, although delinquency is not a major problem for us. We have about a 2.5% delinquency rate, which is not outrageous. But at the same time, we've seen a lower on the new construction stuff, which has been encouraging.
Yeah, I appreciate that clarification, how you pivoted new construction, built to rent. I was actually listening to an episode about country leading builder, D.R. Horton, and how they are running their model. And to make a long story short, from what I hear, there's continuous shortage of housing units for upcoming multiple years. We're just not building enough. And
Right.
whether they are duplexes or triplexes or quads, or single families, is years of under supply, and the country in general just needs more housing units with the population growth. Interestingly enough, a lot of undocumented folks have come over the border. They need a place to live too, and right now they're occupying a lot. Most of them go to the sanctuary cities, but at the end of the day, it's still increasing aggregate demand, and ultimately, cities like Kansas City can be an opportunity for folks to get away from the big city living to a lot more affordable environment. Affordability is a gigantic problem, especially if interest rates stay high. It's another interesting discussion, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, because you basically interest rates can stay at the elevated level, they can come down. Of course, if they come down, they help affordability tremendously. But if they don't, at least in the short run, it comes down to where can you buy or rent what's affordable, right? At the end of the day, that's a key. So again, you're developing new built to rent, you're selling these built to rent to investors, right? And your turnkey properties, you're kind of selling them in retail, you're getting better. Are you doing anything else? Are you doing any interesting projects in the multifamily space? Are you doing any kind of ground up? Because I've heard that too. People are beginning to invest into some new construction. Are you looking for any discounted deals? Obviously, the markets have gone through some correction with higher for longer rates. Are you seeing anything interesting for sale with motivated sellers?
We're not in Kansas City yet. Nothing that seems like a fire sale. Single family wise, there was a pivot period there where, because we're still transacting around 150 deals a year from a single family perspective. So we do absolutely have a pulse on the market. Even though we're not, our disposition method has just changed for clarity. We're not, we're still doing the same volume. We're just not selling them to our investor base, but we do have a pulse on the market. And our newly remodeled inventory was getting snapped up pretty nicely. But what we have noticed, Mike, is that there's such a lack of inventory, even on the investor side of things, that one of the ways we've pivoted also, or just kind of tweaked, and it could be something that gets turned on, turned off very easily, but we started just cleaning out our houses, putting them on market. I guess the industry calls it a wholetail, not wholesaling. We do take the asset down and we buy it, but then we just clean it out and put it on market. And we aim to get the same return that we would get even if we went through the remodel. And a lot of times we're hitting it. Our threshold for a go, no-go decision is actually 75% of our future revenue. If we can get that without doing anything, and going through the pain of remodel and finance and carrying costs and everything, if we can, shorten our cash conversion cycle from 6 months down to 30 days, and we can do that and make 75% of projected future revenue, then we take down that deal. And then we sell the asset that method. And it's been very popular because people are just starving even for, like, small mom and pop investors that are wanting to just do a couple of houses or one flip a year or something. There's nothing on the market. And so we're now feeding that side of the equation too, if we get the opportunity. So that's been interesting. The other pivot or new thing we're doing is a full up ground development. We did buy 10 acres of land that we're able to put 40 units on. We're doing 20 duplexes. Just kind of, we're building out one cul-de-sac off of a very main road. And we're doing that in partnership with a builder who had already owned the land. So we're syndicating that deal out effectively, just doing a small raise, just a couple million dollars. But we're raising that capital and then turning around and doing that development. I think that's a very much a rinse repeat model of you get investors to put a little bit up front to help us with the development, and then they can turn around and actually have preferential access to buy those duplexes as they come off the pipeline on the back end.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And this is despite high interest rate environment. That's the crazy part. Supply is so limited that despite very softened demand is actually not that soft. And this is a very interesting set of circumstances where the things are humming along, even though the Fed has done what they had to do, but the economy continues to hum along. It's
Yeah,
kind
it's
of
interesting that they paused. They've been tantalizingly saying, yes, we're going to do a cut, a cut, a cut, but kind of throwing it out there. And then they're like, well, we're going to wait, we're going to wait. It sounds like they might do a cut in May, but they may wait till July. I mean, who knows?
Well, if they don't have to, they're not. I mean, honestly, if stuff doesn't break, they will not. It's to the point where they're more concerned about inflation risks than about things breaking, because if things are not breaking, they don't have to respond. It's kind of a crazy how the whole environment has changed so fast. And by now, actually, Fed themselves thought the economy would be broken, but it's not. It's a private credit that's rescuing the economy. It's like investors like you who get private credit from without going to the banks. You can raise capital from investors to get the get gets this project to the finish line. So how do you work with investors? You basically help, obviously you said they can participate in the upside of the investment, and then they get the opportunities to buy these type of properties. What are they traded? I'm just curious. If you build ground up, give me an example. What does completed product looks like? If it's a duplex or a quad, and what is it rent at? And just basic math of what you're building.
Yeah, pretty basic, Matt. We're building duplexes that will sell somewhere in the $535,000 range for a duplex that will generate rents on each side of the duplex just under 2,000. They'll probably be around 1,795 per month. So call it, somewhere around $3,900 of or $3,800 to $3,900 of rents when you throw in some HOA fees and those kind of things. So the income will be just under 4,000 per month. Retailing at around 535, low taxes, low insurance in the Midwest. And then we're also doing a rate buy down to make it a little bit more appealing to our investor base. We plug that in right off the get-go. So even though the sales of these particular development won't happen for 18 to 24 months, if we've plugged in there to do an interest rate buy down currently. My investors, if they had to go out and get just a 30-year fixed mortgage, that'd be at 7.5 with 1.25 points. That's a rate's effective today. But with just a simple 2% seller credit, we can get them all the way down to 6.375 with just 1.5 points. So easily buying the rate down to 5.99 in this inflationary market has been appealing. And something that supercharges the ROI and makes it back where we can actually be selling these things at a 6.5 cap on new construction with some decent cash on cash returns. So it's been appealing to our investor base. And quite frankly, Mike, I mean, our investors are have a lot of longevity. They plan ahead. So our investors are typically thinking, look, as long as we have some kind of positive cash flow and we're not having to put money in. The end game is we want to buy a quality portfolio of performing assets that at the end of the day we can look back on in 20 years and say, that was a good asset then, and it's still a good asset today, and it's got professional management, and it's been that kind of legacy wealth generation play that's the long term. So I always kind of liken it to a crock pot or a slow cooker rather than a microwave trying to get rich quick. We're just getting wealthy slowly over time.
Yeah, I appreciate the clarification. So before, this property used to be sold as a cash flow play. Today, the cash flow is so small that given where the interest rates are and where the prices are, that it's really mostly leverage appreciation play.
Yeah, there were four. I mean, I talk about the four pillars of real estate. The cash flow is one of them. The ability to scale with leverage is another. The appreciation upside, and then lastly, the depreciation or tax benefit. So there's always four pillars. I think probably mistakenly, we all got suckered into the whole cash flow one for so long when interest rates were down in the 3 to 4% range for investors. And we just loved, we were always looking at cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. And that's fine because you can feel like you're escaping the rat race if you get, $300 a month of cash flow from one asset and you get 10 assets and you feel like you're at 3,000 a month. But let's be real, at 3,000 a month is still not, it's not life changing. It's not going to get you out of the rat race. So, really what's the big long-term play is we work with wealthy, high income investors that are trying to build something that is that long-term wealth accumulation play. And I think that that's what is the appealing thing is realizing that we're now appealing to those three other, three of the other four pillars of real estate. And cash flow will come eventually, either when rates drop or you do a cash out refi, but it's just not that constant that's going to be, a perceived benefit in the short term.
Well, it's a market condition thing. So in this market, when the cost of debt is high, even with buy downs, very difficult to get a cash flow. And the thing you mentioned, interestingly enough, again, I was listening to the podcast episode last night, and big builders. So you basically are small builder in this case versus some of the big builders. During the hot markets, they would offer folks upgrades. So they would offer folks some marble finishes or marble bathroom, this and that. And those were the options. And again, most of those are not investor product, nonetheless, they provided incentives in the form of taking the extra dollars and just upgrading them. Today, these bigger builders doing the same thing. They're doing the buy downs as the primary incentive for folks to come in because affordability. And at the end of the day, you can't even get a mortgage if you don't meet that service coverage ratio or debt to income ratio. So these buy downs are absolutely critical. Just a quick question. So what does it cost you to buy down? So you're dropping the rate by how much, and how much does it cost? Just repeat that one more time so it's pretty clear.
Yeah, to us, we're paying 2% of the sales price of the asset, so around $11,000 in this instance.
So you're paying 2% of the
Sales price.
sales price, which is, I guess, a portion of their mortgage. It's in terms of mortgage points, probably what, around 3, 4 points
Correct.
relative.
Yeah, about 2.6 points. Yep.
Oh, you're paying, it's costing about 6 points, right? That much relative to the
No.
value.
No, no,
Sorry.
relative to the mortgage. So 2% of the sales price is 2.6 points on that for their mortgage.
So you're paying 2.6% of the balance of the mortgage, and their rate drops by how much?
From 7.5 down to 6.375.
That's a tremendous buy. You're dropping over 100 basis points. You're only costing you 2.6 points. That's a ridiculous. The good old rule used to be 4 points per 1% drop. This is old. And if you can do today 2.6 to buy down more than 1%, that's a pretty good deal, at
Yeah.
least in my book.
Yeah, no, it's been popular and I think appreciated for sure. I mean, people, it's almost like that it used to be never talked about. And to your point, now buyers are coming in very educated saying, hey, do you have an interest rate buy down program? What does that look like? I mean, it's come to be fairly well expected. And it's, you know, just kind of one of those things. Instead of using real estate agents necessarily to go out and sell our product for us, we're effectively saying, hey, we'll take that same amount we would be paying a realtor. Let's just buy down the investor's rate and just, you know, we have a obviously a healthy demand from our investor base, and we're just rewarding them by being loyal customers with an interest rate buy down.
You know what this is telling me, and I'm obviously speculating, but the way I read this data, where the price to buy is relatively cheap, in terms of points you're paying per reduction in the interest rate, it's telling me that the general market, all these lenders, expect the rates to fall.
Yes.
So if they expect the rates to fall, then of course refi opportunity is open, and all the points they've collected, they're happy with that. And as the market rates fall, many investors will be incentivized. So it's sort of an insurance policy. So in
Yeah.
case the rates don't fall, folks, and this is 30-year fixed, I assume, right? Is
Yes, it
that,
is. Yeah, we're talking 30-year fix.
yeah, it's a one-directional insurance. These points, and again, you're providing that in the form of incentive, so it's not really costing them money, but it's costing you a little bit of incentive, but it's providing them a state of mind that they can't go higher. They can only go lower from there. So, yeah. So let's continue the conversation. Where do you see things are going sort of later part of this year? Because, of course, we don't know what the Fed is going to do. From the opportunities perspective, markets haven't really corrected. So you're not seeing softness in the markets. And this is true both residential and forms of commercial multifamily storage. It feels like that there's some softness in commercial properties, but it's not the properties themselves. It's the sponsors who are under financial pressure, who borrowed with variable rate debt. Not once you have a fixed rate debt, you don't have pressure. If you can pay the mortgage, keep the lights on, you're not forced to do anything. So are you seeing any distress situations, or it's kind of chugging along? It's almost counterintuitive. Fed push rates up, but the distress is not showing up the way you would expect it to show up.
Yeah, I think that my take on it is that there's just it's a long cycle, you know, the cycle that we expect to happen very quickly. You know, we talk about it daily, but it probably happens yearly. And I think we're just, you know, waiting for this inevitable, you know, distressed assets, whether that be office or multifamily C class or whatever might come along. And to your point, potentially just mostly multifamily with bad operators, but there's going to be something with the interest rate adjustments that are going to be happening in 2024 and 2025 that'll force the market into distress. just not seeing it yet. So, I mean, certainly expect it later on in the year, Michael, but I'm not seeing it yet. So,
understood. You seeing any office conversions possibilities to, because one of the deep discount asset classes is office, but the conversions are difficult. I'm not sure if you've ever even looked at this. I've spoken with a few folks. It's not an easy process, but in theory, if you get the right building at the deep enough discount, in theory, is this even worth the discussion? Because if you can get the fresh land and you can build ground up, and the building is building more economical than trying to convert. I'm just curious if you've ever looked into this, and maybe this is not your cup of tea, but I've heard that idea being sort of circulated, but the conversions are hard depending on the type of building.
Yeah, certainly not a market expert and not something that I'm looking to do. However, obviously I'm curious and I read up on what's happening in the marketplace. One of my friends is trying to do a new pickleball community, and he looked at converting one of the big box stores into a facility, but decided in the end to build ground up. So to your point, I think it's still a risk to throw all that money into an asset that's still aged. Versus getting exactly what you want in new construction. It's kind of what we're seeing, honestly, in the single family side. We're seeing a lot of benefit from just, you know, I see the benefit now of like building brand new, having everything done the right way, your way, you can control it right from the get-go, as opposed to having to go into something that was built, you know, 50 years ago and trying to formulate out how that's going to translate to today's, you know, end user.
Well, back to the pickleball. We had CG, right? We've gone to play pickleball, we see an old mall converting whatever that was into pickleball courts, and I guess they looked okay. I mean, they were not new construction, terribly exciting, but I guess the conversion process wasn't too difficult.
It wasn't, but it's clearly not. Like, if you go back and compare that to other pickleball facilities, Mike, this one will get left in the dust. So maybe they're first to market, but the poles that were right by the courts, they had no, the walls were far too close together. It was really kind of, it was forced into there. And I think that as you get a facility, if you go look at like the new pickleball facilities that are getting done, it's a good example of like what luxury looks like. And they're going to go get memberships to those pickleball facilities. And that facility will not be there in 10 years' time. It's just, there's no longevity there.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a brilliant observation. These old assets might not be as easily repurposed into something that has a longevity, something
especially to when you're in Kansas City, where we have an abundance of land, very cheap land and very plentiful land in the heart of the city. Clearly, New York City, if they want a pickleball facility, they're gonna have to convert an old building or do something, right? But or in a big major metro. But Kansas City, although we're clearly a big major metro, we're not bound or constrained in any way. So these new facilities are popping up all over the place.
Yeah, that's a great observation. Some of these conversion projects make sense in bigger cities where the land is expensive and difficult to get, while in Midwest, it doesn't make sense to make those investments. So, Mark, I appreciate your wisdom. Thank you for coming on the podcast. What's the best way to for folks to reach out again, to talk to you again, if they are investors, they're looking into duplexes to buy or just want to chat with you and learn?
Thanks for that. Yeah, the company is SBD Housing. And so sbdhousing.com is our domain, and they can just reach out to us through there. I think there's a few buttons on there that they can either start following me on the socials or reach out to us for more information. So happy to have discussions as needed.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. And Kansas City legacy may continue. They're still a great team, and it's exciting to see them. It's really, you know, used to be the GOAT used to be Tom Brady, and just his final thoughts, and he's kind of the old GOAT. He's done. He's gone, and Mahomes is the new GOAT. He's the new young GOAT, and he's still got it, and he still excites people, and it's kind of interesting. So we'll see what
happens. They were big shoes to fill, but no, he's certainly rising into them. And the cool thing about that team is that it truly is a great team aspect. We utilize the analogies from there frequently about how he's a humble, hungry, and smart leader. He's very, if you watch him, he never throws any of his teammates under the bus, and they've done well to really cultivate a winning culture at the Chiefs, and it's been fun to watch. We certainly try and emulate that in our office.
Yeah, it's I concur. These Isn't he buying some ownership in some sports team? He's bought some. It's kind of a, I think it's gonna feel like the next Michael Jordan or Magic Johnson, where he's gonna be a great athlete plus become an owner, part owner of some of these great
Yeah, two now.
franchises.
So he has ownership, minority ownership in the Kansas City Royals baseball team, and he and his wife are owners of the new the women's soccer franchise here called the Kansas City Current here in Kansas City.
Yeah, interesting, fascinating. So, good luck to him with, and good luck to the Chiefs. Thank you again.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.